Hello and welcome to another episode of We Got This Podcast. I'm your host, Lech Kuzowski, and I consider myself somewhat of a cultural square peg. I'm not a massive fan of traditional approaches to organizational culture, and very much instead I prefer cultures based on authenticity, wholeness, and where individuals and organizations can help each other realize their potential. And one of the topics I'm a little bit conflicted about is actually employer branding. On one hand, I see its purpose, I see its value, but on the other hand, I feel that it's just kind of whitewashing, marketing or PR campaigns that many organizations do. And I guess I maybe have seen too many examples of what companies say it's like working for them and what their culture is like when they talk about it externally versus what it is really like day to day. And you can see that when you look at some of the companies marketing and PR in terms of employer branding and maybe their views on Glassdoor and similar sites. That's why today I've got with me James Barrackler, who will help me talk about employer branding and who can kind of bring more information, kind of give us an idea of how to bring your employer branding and most of all your employer value proposition to life in an authentic way. James has started his career with the global employer brand agency Universum in New York City before taking on a role in their headquarters in Stockholm in 2015. And since then, he's worked with some big names across the world on their employer brand strategies and activities before joining SEB as SEB's employer branding team in 2020, where in the last 3 years, he's been elevating SEB's physical and digital activities and help develop their new employer value proposition. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. James, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. I feel like I'm already on your intro sets me up to be the bad guy here a little bit, but looking forward to the dialogue and painting my picture at least.
Definitely, you're definitely not a bad guy. I'm here because I want to learn. I'm genuinely conflicted about the topic. I'm not saying it's the worst thing ever, but I sometimes struggle with seeing the good side. I don't know whether it's simply because of the examples that I've seen. Maybe I'm way too cynical or idealistic on the other hand. I really don't know. So I'm genuinely looking forward to our discussion. But before we jump into that discussion, I need to follow the protocol and start with the usual first question. And that is, when you were little, who did you want to be when you grew up?
I actually had a couple of dreams. I wanted to be a marine biologist. I loved marine animals. And I actually am a huge sports fan. And I played sports throughout my life. I wanted to be a professional American footballer or footballer, soccer player as well. But when I realized that my body probably wasn't going to carry me to those dreams, one of my other passions was actually writing. And I wanted to be an author since I was young. Hasn't quite made it to that point, but I'm working still in writing, storytelling, just maybe in a different environment than I dreamed of as a kid. But
So the connection is there still?
Yes, definitely.
To some extent.
Definitely.
That's really good because we often kind of forget what we wanted to be, who we wanted to be when we were little. And yet we enjoy certain things in our adult life. And then we kind of don't realize that connection is there until somebody points it out and goes, actually, yeah, does that make sense? Why I'm enjoying this activity, this thing? Because when I was little, I dreamed of becoming it. And yes, now that you are on the other side of the pond, it's football over here. It's not soccer. That said, again, I need to dig it up. But around the World Cup time in November, December last year, I came across a video that actually explained from some, I think it was a language expert, linguist, or just somebody who's really passionate about languages, I remember now, who explained the origin of the word soccer. And actually, if I remember correctly, it does come from Britain.
It's the Brits who are at fault. I took a course actually on the history of football in university and association football. So association was shortened to soccer. So it's actually, for all the jokes that we get to be made on the brunt of, it's actually the Brits' fault.
That, yeah, the Brits do have that tendency to kind of try and turn things around, and obviously in a jocular manner, yeah, very often. But you're right. Oh yeah, it sounds strange. But the Australians also call it soccer because
they've got their own football as well.
They've got their own, which is even more different because they've got three goals, if I remember right, and it's kind of a combination of football / soccer / rugby / American football. We could go into that, but maybe let's not.
Podcast for another time.
Definitely. It's something that I definitely could go into. Sports always been a part of my life, and I often actually use and draw on from kind of when it comes to team building, leadership, from sports examples. I think there's a lot that we can see there in terms of how our teams work, how we lead them. Good examples of, you know, whether you can micromanage players when you can't, when it works, when it doesn't. So definitely a little scope there. Right. But we're here to talk about employer branding. I'm sometimes guilty of asking the first question too broadly and kind of always get kind of reined in by the person I'm speaking to. So where do you think we should start when it comes to employer branding? What's maybe some of the common misunderstandings that people have about employer branding that might contribute maybe to a similar conflict that I've got about it, that we're kind of a little bit cynical? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you were saying, and also it touches on why I made a career in employer branding when I wanted to be an author. And I think it's really maybe sometimes a fundamental misunderstanding or a fundamental misuse of employer branding, which from my perspective, for an authentic brand, it's about understanding the reality, understanding the people around you in the organization, and helping synthesize or tell that story in the right channels. So it's not about creating something that's, you know, springing from the minds of us employer branding professionals. It's about really understanding the people around you and telling those stories. And that ultimately will be, if not perfectly authentic, very, very close to, you know, the authentic truth.
That's interesting that you say that, because that's something that I often, to a certain extent, deal with when I work on cultural elements within organizations. How do we make, you know, if you've got a small organization of, I don't know, 30, 50 people, it's fairly easy to get everybody in the room and, you know, fleshing out what our culture is, what we want it to be, how do we want to feel when we work together, what do we want it to look like, and so on and so forth. Right? It's fairly easy. When you've got 500, not so much.
10,000.
You could strive for... Or 16,000, even better, right? I didn't want to even go that way. But then how do you kind of go about that, kind of collating that and that, and making it so that it is authentic, or is that it kind of represents the people and what the organization is about?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I would say, like, the heart of the problem in a lot of ways for big organizations like SAP. And I've done a lot of EVP projects, employer branding projects for large companies all over the world. Some of them easier than others. And I think SEB is actually what stood out to me was how actually fundamentally aligned we were around the core concepts that ended up making up our employer value proposition. It was, I mean, number one, you need to go with like a data-led approach. And I'm a big proponent of that. So, I mean, you're not going to be able to get everybody in a room, as you said, like if you have 30 or 50 people, yeah, you can all talk in the same room. You're never going to be able to do that with 16,000, but finding a way to incorporate the voices and the thoughts of as many people as you can. So we, you know, internal surveys, focus groups, things like that, very much part of that process. And kind of synthesizing that into three core elements was actually super easy. And I think that speaks to the point about we're not trying to create something new. And maybe, of course, there's companies that are going to try to overhaul a culture, but that's not necessarily what we were trying to do. It was more to, I think, crystallize and align around the aspects that are really strong at SAP and to promote those in a way that's, you know, attractive for people to come work with us. So identifying those three core elements, you know, wasn't that difficult actually when you kind of get the data-led approach. And then, of course, you have to go through, you know, in a big organization, you have to run it by multiple, you know, gates and milestones and things like that. And of course, there's going to be, you know, I would say more nitpicks about wording than anything. But ultimately, you know, the core ideas were there from the start. We didn't create something new there.
Would you be able to tell us a little more about what those concepts are, what those three areas are that you mentioned?
Yeah, definitely. So the rough versions of them basically were, one was about, you know, the people and relationships at the company. So it's a very network-driven, very welcoming, very collaborative environment, and you need to be comfortable in that type of environment to thrive. So it's both a promise and a, you know, need to know type situation. And then the growth and development opportunities, so like trainings and possibilities to move around the company, internal mobility. And there's a big amount of trust for people once you're in the door to basically take risks on you and in developing you in areas that you may not have any experience in. And the third one was really around impact. And I think this is one that's very important to me and was something that I didn't really strongly associate with the financial industry. So SEB is a large Northern European bank. I come from the US, lived and worked in New York for a number of years. And I'd say the banking industry in the US and in New York is fairly cutthroat, greedy, and uncaring about people, and really having not a lot of interest in the positive impact on society. But SEB, for those outside of Sweden, maybe not so well understood, but SEB kind of comes from this family heritage called the Wallenberg family, and they're heavily invested in, you know, scientific research, nonprofit funding into culture and arts and stuff in Sweden and education. And I think their long-term beliefs and values and direction, long-term vision, have really been fundamental at SEB for a long, long time. And so it's this positioning of us, of course, we're a business, we're looking to make money, but B also has this like very central belief that our position is really to help make society better by connecting investors with, you know, important projects and investment opportunities. So those three aspects, the people, the development, and the impact, primarily from a societal standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint.
I like how you mentioned the kind of the origin of SEB and where it's from, and that's a kind of the piece that's often missing when we talk about organizations, we talk about kind of teams, kind of the heritage that we've got. And yes, Scandinavian countries, Sweden, they are a different breed when it comes to kind of the approach, and it's something that obviously it's got supporters, it's got its opponents, and I don't think there is one culture, one way of doing things that there's kind of the best. I think it's a mixture of all of them, and it's an interesting that you mentioned that, because we often miss that piece. We miss that piece within our organizations, how we set up our cultures, but also how we work together as individuals. We miss that piece, especially when we just simply on a day-to-day basis when we communicate, right? Just because I'm from one country and I communicate in a certain way, doesn't mean that it's going to resonate with you. You're from a different country, you're from a different culture. But I somewhat digressed. There are a couple of things that I wanted to touch upon. The first one was when you were doing all of that research and kind of getting all that data at the touch points to identify these three areas, what was it in any way weighted in terms of where does that influence come from? Because within a large organization, like you said, SEB, 16,000 employees, you know, you've got the echelons, the senior, the boardroom, the senior leadership teams, and then you kind of, as you go through the structures, where does that kind of balance come from in terms of creating this in an authentic way, in terms of direction?
Yeah, and it's not I wouldn't say that that's a perfectly mathematical or scientific process. I mean, I would say the three major lenses or perspectives that you want to bring into this is the internal perspective, which we try to do in a fairly large quantitative way with an internal survey. So really trying to capture kind of the internal reality as me and all of our colleagues currently see it. The external perspective, also a very quantitative perspective. So using a third-party partner with, you know, career preference data, brand perception data, so how we're perceived, what talent actually wants. And then the third perspective, as you alluded to, is the kind of the strategic perspective. So top leadership, how they see the future, how they see us, you know, going. If we're not quite where we need to be right now, what are the few stress points where maybe we need to be a bit aspirational, as you might call it? And of course, there might be a little bit of a gap between now and 2 or 3 years from now if we're being a bit aspirational in terms of the career experience right now, but that's where we're headed. And, you know, from their perspective, then we need to commit to, you know, certain things that we're going to develop in that regard to meet those expectations. So I think it is a balancing act in terms of finding the sweet spot. But if you're thinking about those three lenses as a Venn diagram, you know, all kind of overlapping each other at a certain point, trying to find the sweet spot and the things that are aligned amongst all three. And then if you know, there's certain ones you need to stretch a little bit because that's what external talent wants, or that's what, you know, the leaders see us, where the leaders see us going in the next 5 years, then you maybe take that into account on a ad hoc basis in that respect.
That does make absolute perfect sense to me, because obviously that's what the leadership needs to do. That's their responsibility, right? That's what their job is. And I get that they need to kind of provide that. And if it's done in an authentic way, it's basically, okay, we're making this decision based on what we've got available with the best of our intentions, and we're transparent, we're honest about it, we're authentic about it. Fantastic. If it changes in 3 years' time, 5 years' time, fair enough. You know, hindsight's a beautiful thing that you can look back on. But the main reason I asked that question is because I absolutely hate. I've been in that situation and avoid it like the plague. And also when I see it happening, I always call it out. And that is the illusion of choice. And when we do all sorts of these types of surveys, when it comes to, for example, employer branding, or when I do it in relation to cultural elements of an organization, you know, because we want people's views, we want to hear your voice, we want your input, we want you to co-create this. Often when I hear, when I get opposition and or I hear sentences like, oh, what's the point? Nothing's going to change. They're going to do it their way anyway. First of all, to me, that's a signal that things like that have happened in the past and people genuinely have reasons to be cynical, whether it's within this organization that it happened or previous one. So that's fair enough. That's one point. But often organizations do that. Senior leadership teams do that, that they kind of go through these exercises to get people's input, but they already have, you know, a path that they want to pursue. How do we avoid that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I don't feel like we ran into that in this case with SEB. So I can't speak from that perspective, but yeah, I mean, I do think it comes down to leadership style and, I mean, it's some of the cultural foundations at the company. I mean, yeah, if you do have that kind of legacy of, yeah, maybe asking opinions and ignoring them or going your own way, then I think it's going to be a bigger challenge. And I do think that that's where you run into situations like you've kind of put the devil's advocate position of the podcast of, you know, where it can ring hollow. People don't believe in it. It doesn't ring true. And I think ultimately you end up seeing that though very clearly in, you know, your retention and your ability to attract talent. And of course there's areas within SEB where we have challenges in that respect, but I think that motivates us only more, I think, to work on this and identify the things that are not going well. I do think we have a great feedback culture. And I think that's an important element of this is kind of not just with an EVP process, but in general we have an insight survey. We call it the annual, you know, survey of all of our employees. And I think there's a lot of attention paid to the results on that. So not only on a top level, but then drilling down within each of the or business areas, everybody has workshops around those results and looking at identifying actions that they can take forward to address some of those things. So I think, I mean, that maybe is an example, and it's not a very creative example, but it's an example of, I think, how important the feeling of it being a feedback culture is into kind of having the trust and being able to implement, you know, something like EVP. But I would say that, you know, I think people resonate very strongly with the EVP that we did get across. And I think part of then the journey going forward to make people all feel like it's personal in a way, because of course, I think everybody kind of recognizes these three broad themes and feels like that's very true. But all three of those areas are fairly broad, high-level areas in a way. And there's lots of nuance underneath that. And so part of our, you know, journey going forward to make this really, I think, feel quite tangible and personal for everyone is to continue to explore kind of the localization of that piece. So ways in which that broad theme is packaged or explained in a more concrete, tangible, everyday way for, you know, a certain business area when they're trying to recruit somebody new or when you onboard somebody, different things like that. So we're kind of just starting that process in terms of really embedding it and localizing it in as many ways as we can. But I think that's another aspect of like showing that we're continually listening and continually incorporating what people have to say about it.
Okay. I'm glad that things are going well for you at SEB when it comes to these projects and that you've got that culture. Mm. if I kind of go out of SCB for a little while and pull out a thread of something that you mentioned at the start, mm-hmm. just a couple of minutes ago, about things that indicators, little signs of when it comes to that you can notice that your employer branding or your EVP is basically fluff. What indicators, what signals can come from inside, but as well as the outside of the organization that could give us that kind of indication? What would you say?
Yeah, I think the starting point would be basically trying to create something from the brain of a marketeer, basically. And I'm a marketeer in a way, so I can say this with a degree of Schadenfreude or whatever, but that I think it has to be grounded in the reality, in the people. Because if you're just creating something that's exciting and flashy, you know, you're going to run into problems. And I think the main thing you see when that's the foundation is problems with retention. So I think you're selling somebody a bill of goods, a career, based on false premise. And I think in today's labor market, people have more visibility, more information, larger networks, more international opportunities, more flexible working opportunities. The job market is more fluid than ever. And so you're going to need to deliver on what you've sold, at least to a large degree, in order to keep people. So I think that's the biggest red flag you'll see is problems with retention or very low engagement within your workforce. And that can lead to all kinds of, so even if people are staying, if they're not happy, if they're not feeling like this is a positive career for them, then you're going to have low productivity, you're going to have bad relationships between people, more harassment and negative issues and things like that. So, I mean, those are the after effects of, you know, the poorly made employer brand, basically. I don't know if, was there another aspect to that you wanted to pull on, or?
I think you've answered really nicely from an internal point of view. Those would be the places I would look. Retention, productivity, for sure. I would say linked to retention is the duration of service. So if you've got somebody and they leave within 6 months from joining, that's an indicator. I think looking at, I'm literally going off what we discussed with Nick Jested in one of my previous guests on the podcast, but also kind of an absolute data mastermind. We had a workshop together with him and a few people last week, and I'm just thinking about that. And it was one thing where he suggested looking at the data based on team leads, supervisors, and managers, just comparing kind of, you know, in individual teams, but kind of per department, you can do that. But then per individual leader, which leader needs support, because they might not be kind of feeling red. They might be a new leader, which is notorious that we promote people into managerial and leadership roles without giving them any prior training in leadership and management, right? And I don't mean structures and processes. I mean how to be a leader. Yep. And that's kind of an indicator where we can look. So that's kind of I'm sure there's plenty more indicators that we can look at within that. What about the external? What indicators might there be?
Yeah, I think low engagement with your brand is obviously an indicator that the brand is not attractive. So, but I don't think that's necessarily kind of the devil's advocate position here, is more kind of if it's a hollow brand. But I think, of course, like engagement rates, visitors, time spent with your website, things like that will be strong indicators that your brand is not attractive or you're not reaching the right people with it. But I would say, I guess then, like, you know, negative comments or things like this can be indicators that, or low willingness to participate in kind of like external facing activities from your colleagues, I would say is an internal / external indicator. So I think, you know, if people aren't bought in, they're not going to be willing to participate or be enthusiastic about, you know, sharing stuff on their own social media or, you know, participating in video or, you know, being part of events, things like this. So I would say that's both an internal and external factor, maybe, but I would say a very important one.
That social media one, I'll absolutely love that one. And when you said how many people share things that you want them to share about the organization, or even better, how many people just do it out of their own accord? And I think that's an indicator. It took me straight back to when I was an employee. I was kind of going a little bit cringe, right? Cringing is one, because I wasn't necessarily maybe associated. Even if I liked what they were doing, It's like, okay, how relevant is it to people in my network, right? How is it going to benefit them that I share it on my Facebook or my Instagram or whatever?
And I think,
well, it's not, because it's not the type of thing to share.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I would say I'm also fairly careful or curated about what I put on my own social media. And there's a style for everyone out there. I mean, there's plenty of people who are much more active than I am and are an incredible source of sharing and interesting tidbits. And that's clearly, you know, works for them and part of their personality. But I think Sweden is in general, I'd say, if we're generalizing cultural archetypes, I mean, is not a big bragging culture. And I think social media like LinkedIn, maybe especially in the professional space, is maybe perceived as, you know, a place where you humble brag or whatnot and you kind of self-promote. And I think a lot of Swedes are loath to do that. So I think there's basically how we've approached this topic is not trying to set up the most efficient pipeline of pouring template content down the throats of anybody who's willing to listen to us internally, but rather to educate people and give confidence to people about like what's okay to post and encourage them that it is okay to post and show them ways, examples of ways that you are not just copying and pasting or sharing, you know, the official SCP post, but you feel empowered and confident in using your own voice to tell about things that are interesting for your network, because we've got a ton of specialists and, you know, general high level stuff is going to be, you know, useless in their network. It's not going to be interesting. So finding ways that they can tell some of the really cool, niche, interesting educational stuff, the exciting stuff they're working on, ways in which they can talk about that without, you know, being afraid they come off as a braggart or they're sharing something that's, you know, not relevant at all for them or their network.
And also, I think if it's a kind of a copy-paste job, it's not authentic.
No.
Is it? It's authentic maybe for the organization, but it's not authentic for that person.
Exactly.
Because they might have a different style of communication, as I said. Well, you know, some of us curate what we've put on social media. And it is in our style. Whether it's to do with the type of photos and angles that you take your photos with and that you put on Instagram, and also the language that you're using in written. So yeah, you're absolutely right. So it has to be authentic and people have to be given that opportunity to kind of create. Give them the resources, give them the kind of the building blocks of whatever it is that you want them to post, and let them figure out for themselves what works for them, most of all, whether they want to post that. Okay, so we looked at external and internal signs, potentially, that might suggest to us that our employer branding, our EVP, is somewhat fluffy that we need to look at if we're in an organization. At the start, we talked about authenticity. You talked about SCB's main kind of three pillars, three areas. Not necessarily wanting to go into kind of devil's advocate here again, stance, but I'm kind of curious. A lot of organizations are investing the time and effort and resources into employer branding and creating their EVPs, and they are authentic. No doubt. They've done their legwork. It's all cool. No questions, no doubts. I'm convinced. It makes them sound like everybody else. Those three areas, the four areas, the key things that make us stand out are actually the same as the four areas that make the other companies within this space, within this particular industry, kind of stand out that they've got in their EVPs. What can we do about that? How can we kind of infuse even more authenticity and make it more about us and or the organization that we're with, and not about it kind of being sounding a little bit generic, unfortunately. Is there a way?
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge from our side, of course, with people working in employer branding, because I think, yeah, of course, I mean, our headline, Build Sustainable Societies Together, could apply to a number of companies, for sure. And I think that's a reality that we live in. I mean, there's very little original copy to be left to be written in many ways. You know, there's a massive international network of companies and everybody's got some level of employer brand or marketing tagline. But I think the combination of things, you know, not everybody's able to have the same combination of things or sees the same combination of three or four things as exactly the same. So there's that element, of course, of which of these are combined to be your main pillars. But then it really is about not leading with the marketing copy for your employer brand all the time, but actually finding ways to tell the stories in creative ways and elaborating on those in ways that's, you know, more concrete, more tangible, more current. Because obviously, I mean, an EVP, you'll probably do every 3 or 5 years, refreshing or redoing. So we don't plan on doing that anytime soon. But then, you know, finding current ways, new topics, new projects, new partnerships, things like that that are coming up and continually evolving that story and telling it through, you know, the voices and stories of the people who are making it happen.
Interesting. I think as you were saying that, well, one thing that occurred to me, maybe my cynical side when I do feel it's kind of just a PR stint, it's about these organizations where I just see the kind of the generic stuff that I see on every other website, and that's what makes me think cynically about them, because they're missing that piece that you've just mentioned, that storytelling element. Because yeah, let's face it, you know, you need to really make an effort to stand out, simply because it's very difficult to be original and inventive in this space. And we said there's only a kind of finite combination of how we can use words and things like that, and kind of what else do we do about that. And I think, and there are some really good examples that I've seen of organizations that do, you know, do the storytelling so well that they don't talk about, you know, these are our four main pillars, right? They forget about that. It's just like, it's the same with any other branding, I guess, is if they tell you about what they do, I'm not interested. I'm interested in, you know, telling me, you know, about the feelings, about the emotions and things like that. And one of the organizations that came to my mind straight away, and they do it brilliantly, and I'm definitely not their target audience, but still love to work for them, it's a company called X-Team. And they are software engineering, kind of developers, outsourcing developers into organizations and providing teams within organizations, from what I understand. I had Ryan, their CEO, on the show a couple of years ago on a different podcast. Ryan, if you're listening, as I've reached out, I'd love to have you again just to talk about that, because it would beautifully tie in. The storytelling there is just absolutely amazing. How they gamify the kind of the whole employee experience they've got within the organization is absolutely brilliant. So if anyone's curious and wants a good example of employer branding, but also how to kind of build an employee experience, X-Team, absolutely, absolutely worth having a go, especially kind of on their, I think, Instagram and YouTube. They've got loads of stuff that's brilliant there. Okay, so we've covered the extent.
There was one other aspect to it, I think, as well, that like the value of the EVP in kind of aligning people internally, because I mean, also there's a great deal of employer branding that's done, you know, in everyday conversation, people with their families, with their friends, when they're, you know, off work and stuff like this. So I think that's another important part of, you know, building advocacy, building the brand is not through, you know, beating people over the head with, you know, the marketing lingo, but giving something for people to rally around, giving a shared understanding of like who we are and who we want to be. And that gives people, you know, an edge or a focus or a lens with which then they can, you know, interpret that and share when they're talking to people about how their day was or how their career is going, things like that. I think that's an underappreciated or underreported way as well in which, you know, the EVP matters in terms of actual tangible effect in the brand.
We've touched about on a number of things, and one thing that kind of occurred to me is also about setting expectations. I guess within our teams, within our organizations, because you've been at SEB for nearly 3 years, if I remember right, and obviously it's an ongoing process. It takes time. SEB, massive organization. Because I feel that sometimes we want to do these things, as with a lot of kind of cultural employer branding initiatives, and we kind of expect results then and there. Next week, you know, we want to have 20 plus percent more of applications for these vacancies that we're trying to fill or whatever. What's kind of realistic? Maybe using the SEB's example, because you're a massive organization, this is going to give us a time scale. What was kind of the implementation path, kind of, I don't know, milestones, but kind of the period that you were foreseeing for this kind of in different stages, I'm guessing, if you broke it down?
Yeah, I mean, forever in a way, I guess. No, no. I mean, so the EVP process from a tactical and, you know, research, development, approval process, launch took about a year. And I was on paternity leave for an early part of that. But then, so when I came back in April, I think we really hit the ground running in terms of synthesizing some of the data and pushing things forward. And then before Christmas, we launched it, you know, fully externally and all that. So, I mean, from that standpoint, and I've seen EVPs take less time than that. I've seen EVPs take more time than that. But I would say you know, somewhere in that time frame is reasonable for like developing and launching, you know, the visual and communication side of it as well. But then, I mean, as I kind of alluded to, this is not a, you know, a done and dusted project now. I mean, we don't see it that way at all. I mean, this is now the core for us in our employer branding jobs, but it's also very fundamental to how we want to, you know, see the culture and the career experience ongoing until we decide that it's no longer relevant. So for the foreseeable future. And so this year in particular is very much about like implementing and building in experiences, increasing knowledge internally, increasing engagement internally with what it means and how it's relevant for people in their jobs and things like that. So it's definitely not a finite project in that sense.
No, definitely it's not. I know that question is kind of somewhat leading and maybe somewhat confusing. It's absolutely not. It's not a finite thing. It's something that, yes, you can break down in stages into phases and you kind of add phases and stuff. But as soon as you can, one of the phases is done. I was particularly interested in that research data gathering phase, as you said, that it's taken about a year.
Yeah, that part was maybe about 6 months. And then the other 6 months was more about kind of putting the finishing touches on it, making it, you know, beautiful, putting it, getting some of the stories together, getting on the website, things like that. So that was more the creative launch phase.
Okay. No, absolutely. I'm kind of trying to really emphasize this point that it's because that's a lot of what I often face with in my line of work is that, we're going to do a few workshops, we're going to hammer it out, and then it's all nice and dandy. And of course we need to work on that and so on and so on. That's the realization. Great. But it's a process, right? It's months in kind of prep and discussions with stakeholders, various people, and kind of then figuring out what you want to do with that data. What is that data showing you versus what you want the data to be showing you, for example, right? Is what you're hearing, is it what you want to hear, or is it something that you don't want to hear? And kind of you make a decision based on that. Mm-hmm. I think that's also an important point. And yes, it kind of continues. It's a living organism. Employer branding, the same as culture, is a living organism, right? People come and go. Business priorities and strategies change, which all impact the employer branding, the EVP, the culture. It's just, you know, it's forever. It's kind of evergreen in a way. It's kind of evolving as we do, and we kind of contribute. And I think building, for lack of a better phrasing, building in mechanisms to help it become kind of self-sustaining. And by mechanisms, I mean, and from my point of view and culture, is kind of teaching people, helping people, supporting people so that they can develop skills, so they can become autonomous. And not in just kind of how they do their work and how they lead themselves, but also how they contribute to the overall culture within the organization. That's an important element as well. But again, that's part of the journey. You can't do that at the start. It's something that comes in phase 7, 12, depending on the maturity of your organization, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
There's one thing that's also on my mind a little bit, and I'm always mindful of asking this question. So I'm going to say if there was one thing, but if there's more than one, if you can think of, if it's too difficult to answer that way, feel free to name a few. What are some of the common, and similar to my initial question, common mistakes that you see that people, organizations make when it comes to employer branding and EVPs that they can quickly avoid? Let's assume the starting position, okay, we want to be more intentional about our employer branding and about our EVPs. What should we avoid? Let's maybe put the question that way.
I think avoid short-term thinking, I would say, is maybe the one that probably underpins a lot of things. So I think if you're, you know, looking for short wins or quick wins, or, you know, just to show that you're doing something, you know, you get an EVP done and dusted, launch a campaign, and then you're all fine and dandy, and then you move on to something else. I think that maybe is the root of many problems, is this kind of feeling that, yes, we've done the EVP, good. Check that off and let's, you know, move on. I think it's an investment long term, and I think you need to think about it that way, looking at ways that it's woven into everything that you do. I mean, depending on your scope and your area of responsibility, but I mean, it can touch on so many like moments in an employee, a colleague's life cycle during their career, you know, from the engagement in the recruitment phase to onboarding, to learning and development, to, you know, career progression, to mobility, to, you know, even to feedback if people leave. I mean, that's stuff we're looking at as well. So better understanding how we are delivering or under delivering on our EVP when, you know, if that's what leads people to leave. So I think seeing it as embedded in basically everything from an employee lifecycle standpoint and career experience to, and so finding ways to continue working on that, finding new ways to make it better, to make it better connected to how people have their careers at the company. So I would say that maybe broadly speaking is a mistake. It's that short-term thinking or kind of like compartmentalized thinking about the employer brand or the EVP. I also think like consistency is a thing. I think sometimes, you know, it can be such a mountain to climb and get it out there. And then, you're either kind of sick of it if you've been close to the project and you kind of then wander off into, you know, maybe other areas. But I think maintaining that consistency, continuing to bring it up and elevate it internally with, you know, leaders as well as colleagues, I think is a key one as well. So don't drop the ball after finishing the.
Thank you for answering a question even before I asked it, because I was going to ask. So if you've got a situation in your organization that you've got your EVP and your employees kind of don't feel it, they don't agree with that, What do you do? How can they kind of voice that? How can you encourage that they voice that? But you've already answered that question, so I'm grateful for that. Thank you very much. I think we've covered kind of all the spectrums of employer branding. Kind of we jumped around different elements from kind of what we can do. What are some of the signs that your EVP or employer branding might be a little bit fluffy from an internal and external point of view? You told us about SCV, what it's like within the organization, what you were focusing on, and now I'm a little bit curious. What are kind of the next steps? Next things that you're going to focus on let's limit that to 2023. Mm-hmm. If you can tell us openly live in public, kind of what the plans are for you and your team and the employer branding team and kind of the whole EVP at SCB over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I can definitely touch on some of it. So one thing that I'm working on currently is actually a learning pathway. So we have quite a massive digital campus at SCB with trainings and things like this, and one that we're working on now is actually a learning path for understanding the EVP, because obviously people participated in the process, people had different touch points with the EVP, you know, as it was launched and things like this, but many people maybe still have a very basic or not at all awareness of it in a large organization. That can happen. So I mean, implementing this like training gives those people an opportunity to engage, a better understand, and also for new joiners. I mean, people who join after we've launched the EVP, you know, won't really understand the process and the importance of it. So that's something we're developing, and really the core essence of that is not actually to explain employer branding necessarily or what an EVP is in great detail. We have like deeper dive resources for that if people are really interested, but it's actually like what it means for you, why it's important for you in your non-employer branding job, and kind of doing some fun video and with some of our colleagues about kind of showing the ways in which you can personalize your employer branding pitch. So not just regurgitating the marketing language, but, you know, understanding it and then letting it out through your own voice. So I think that's the main message there, and that speaks to kind of a lot of what we've been talking about during this podcast. Other things are definitely like around ambassadorship and education. So we are doing, you know, we do like a social media ambassador academy where we, as I kind of mentioned, you know, we're talking about this topic and like showing people how they can, you know, use the resources that are available to kind of share their own message rather than just copy and pasting, and a lot more storytelling as well. So we're actually, one of the big topics for us is internal mobility. So it's not actually that as much of an external topic. I mean, of course, it's interesting for external talent as well, and it will be, you know, some of it will be external facing. But one of the big things that we have as actually, I think, quite a unique aspect of SCB. I've had a number of colleagues who work in other big organizations where this is not the case, but SCB is extremely supportive and promotes a lot of movement within the company. We don't, once we have somebody that we feel like is a great colleague, that we empower people to, you know, kind of take on new challenges and stuff. So, but it's still a very tricky thing. I mean, both in some cases, because it can be sensitive with current managers and things like that. So there is some like cultural encouragement and shift that we need to continue on, but also just in terms of like awareness, because I mean, the bank is so segmented, and there's so many varied and niche opportunities that people just don't know some of the possibilities that are out there with your skills. So I think that's going to be a big area for us in terms of like awareness and education and storytelling is around, you know, how you can move within the bank and develop your career.
Thanks for sharing that. That actually kind of came, one other question came to me in relation to that is, I'm not going to ask it in a kind of vague way and kind of in general, but maybe let's say specifically, if you can, as a ballpark, how much of your attention and your focus is on the external employer branding versus the internal? Is it a 50-50? I appreciate, obviously, it fluctuates and changes depending. But what would you say it's kind of on average, or maybe at this moment in time?
No, it's a good question, and I mean I will speak from my own, you know, job role. The employer branding team has been historically much more focused on external, so maybe 90% external. We've shifted that more, but it's also because we have internal comms, we have learning and development, we have talent management colleagues, people who are working on, you know, internal processes, things that connect to employer branding and might be, you know, seen as employer branding or career experience stuff more full time. So I think we are shifting more towards maybe 60-40, 65-35 external versus internal, but and collaborating a lot more, I would say. I think that's been one of the big keys and one of the best things to come out of the EVP process was actually a lot more cross-collaboration on some of the HR topics, quote-unquote HR topics, where I think there's a lot more understanding and synergy for how we can, you know, work together on some of these things with us bringing the employer branding perspective, but maybe not being the drivers of some of these things that will affect the employer brand. So that's what I would say is that we have resources working more full-time on internal stuff, but from our team, we're a little bit more external focused.
Okay, that makes sense, because I think that's another reasons why I often feel cynical is because for a lot of organizations, it's all what it's about externally, right? So it's about the wrapper, the paper that we kind of wrap ourselves in our organizations and without looking internally. And I often actually feel that we, not just in when it comes to employer branding, but kind of in general in life, we do things backwards. We just have a tendency like that, right? It's more important to focus on yourself, on what's going on within the organization. And first of all, it will make things easier kind of promoting things externally. Secondly, it will kind of happen more naturally because people, if you do look after them, if you kind of, the employer branding is on point and people do feel it, you won't have to ask people to share stuff. You won't have to tell them they will be doing stuff. Kind of linking back to what we said about the social media element. James, thank you very much for sharing all that knowledge, clearing things up for me, hopefully for many people as well. My intention was to be a little bit controversial and play the devil's advocate in this situation, but it was not to make you feel that you have to defend yourself and put you on the defensive. Hopefully you did not feel it that way, but you've been a great source of knowledge, and I feel better about employee branding.
Are you convinced?
Sure, now, simply because I understood it. I'm convinced. We have to arrange. I'll come over to Stockholm. We'll have an official baptism of some sort where I'm converted for sure. Mostly because I understand it better, and I think you've linked it really well to marketing, which is something that I understand a lot better. Because at the end of the day, it is branding. It is branding, which is very close to linked to marketing as well, which makes sense.
But happy to have helped share my insight and maybe convinced you a little bit. So appreciate you having me on and diving into the topic.
Thank you very much, James. Before I let you go, I'd like to invite you to check out Culture and Micropractices, which I share something every couple of weeks, of small, quirky, and often unconventional ideas to inspire cultural change within organizations, which also will very nicely often link to employee branding, directly or indirectly sometimes. They are all basically about promoting psychological safety, collaboration, and how our employees feel at work. And when done consistently, they have a massive impact on culture, on employer branding, and basically how our teams work authentically in their day-to-day. If that's something you're interested in, please go over to human.pm/CMP for Culture Micropractices, and you can find them there. As always, if you enjoyed the show, give those like or share buttons a little tickle to spread the word in your networks, and you can always subscribe in whatever platform you're using to tune into these podcasts. I was your host, Lech Wazowski. Until next time.